starting a private practice isn't what it used to be. Today's clinicians are starting private practices much quicker, easier, and cheaper than before. And they aren't guessing their way through it or getting stuck in analysis paralysis. They're following a tried and true roadmap in order to save time, money, and frustration. There is no reason to reinvent the wheel or struggle to figure out how to start a private practice on your own. We've helped thousands of SLPs and OTs through this process, and now we want to help you too. For a limited time, I'm offering a free copy of our private practice roadmap, specifically for SLPs and OTs who are curious about private practice and want to see what the journey looks like. To download your free copy, please visit startyourprivatepractice.com/roadmap to sign up. Now, on to the episode. Shauna Klump is a speech-language pathologist with a large, thriving private practice with multiple employees and a full operations team near Baltimore, Maryland. I got to know Shauna when she was in the Grow Your Private Practice program. She grew quickly from having a small private practice on the side to having a large brick-and-mortar clinic, a full clinical team, and support staff that treats hundreds of families. Because Shauna has built up her business to have people and systems to support herself and the business, she's looking forward to taking a mostly unplugged maternity leave with her first child. In this episode, she talks about how she got started and also how she grew quickly, what her private practice looks like, and recommendations for other private practitioners who are looking to have brick-and-mortar clinics with teams. If you've been thinking about growing a private practice with a full team, a robust clinic, hundreds of clients, and systems to support you, this is a must-listen episode, so stay tuned. I'm Jenna Castro-Casbon, speech-language pathologist, business coach, and creator of the Start Your Private Practice system. And I'm on a mission to turn stuck SLPs into successful private practitioners. If you're tired of dealing with high productivity requirements, high caseload sizes, and low pay, it's time to take control of your professional, personal, and financial life and finally get the freedom, flexibility, and financial abundance that you deserve by working with private clients in your own practice. Join me here each week as I share tips, best practices, and inspirational interviews on the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. If you're a private practitioner or one in the making, you're in the right place, so let's get started. Before we dive in, can you please share your name, your location, and the name of your private practice?
Definitely. I'm Shauna Klump. I am based in Annapolis, Maryland, and my private practice is called Kid Connections Therapy.
So I am so excited to do this episode because we've actually known each other for years at this point.
Yes.
You've been in a couple of my programs. We got to hang out at Asha in line for pizza or sandwiches or something one day. And that was super cool. But I've really watched you go from like having a really small practice to having like a pretty big, thriving practice. And I know several of our listeners are interested in like what it takes to build a more substantial private practice. So before we get to that, though, you can share a little bit about kind of how you got started in private practice and what those early days looked like.
First and foremost, I utilized all of the different iterations of your programs because that really helped me to figure out what to do and how to do it well and to avoid as many mistakes as possibly could be avoided. So a huge thank you on that one. But I officially launched in 2016. It was just me in my car, which makes me sound homeless, but I wasn't. I did have a home, but I did not have an office space. And so I would go into my clients' homes. And really the way that I built my clients at that point or built my caseload was I started to collaborate with other service providers in the area because I was looking for partners and team members to bring on for their services. And so that really helped to build awareness of my services in the area and reliability about who I was, the quality of the services that I was providing. In 2018 or so, somewhere around there, we started taking insurance. And by we, I mean I, because it was basically just me at that point. And that, you know, again, you and your programs really helped to answer all of the millions of questions that I had around that, because insurance is no joke. And so I started small. I started with just one insurance provider, Blue Cross Blue Shield, which was a big one in our area. So I did a little bit of research on what phone calls am I getting for which insurances to figure out which route to take. Taking insurance really blew up the business, so to speak. And then 2019 was when I hired my first employee. I did have a contractor who was working for me prior to that, but 2019 was when I hired my first employee, W-2 employee, and got an office space. Then 2020 came, and at that point, I hired some more employees. Really, I was making that transition from having contractors to employees. And then COVID hit, and there was a little bit of a pivot. But shockingly and surprisingly, we kept growing. I remember in the groups that we had, you know, we kind of all got together and tried to help support each other in your groups around, how do we do this? And how do we pivot? And how do we think creatively around keeping our business growing and thriving and surviving? And so with all of that support, we were able to continue to grow. We, in 2021, doubled our office space. So we added basically a second office within the same building, which is where we currently are. Our team continued to grow, and we are in the process of taking on another office space in the building. So I'm hoping that that will be done by the summertime, but we've had some construction challenges and things like that. You know, really just growing the team, growing our client base, growing our physical space. I'm no longer homeless in my car, which is great.
And listeners, you can hear how this happened over time and with support and gradually, and in a way that felt comfortable to you, but also was kind of what the market was indicating, right? Like, mm-hmm. I really remember those really dark early, I know everyone remembers the early days of COVID. And as someone who was helping support private practitioners who all of a sudden went from having, you know, however their business was going to like no clients, no income, that was a pretty scary time for everyone. But I think what people couldn't have predicted was just the amount of need that was going to come out of that, right? Like, yes, it was, you know, a couple kind of dark and scary months, again, for everybody, but especially business owners. But a lot of people grew and grew quickly, like during COVID.
Yeah. I think what really came out of it for us that was sort of that silver lining was it required us to think creatively about the service offerings that we had. And we were able to add things like virtual services for families that we hadn't imagined being able to do that before. And it was successful. And that's a service line that we still offer. Maybe not for every family, because not every family wants it, but it has really changed our attendance rates. It's really changed our ability to support families in ways that perhaps we weren't able to once we got the office space and we were no longer going into homes. That is one of the things that came out of it that I think was very unexpected. And then in our area, I think a lot of therapists were looking to leave the schools because they weren't necessarily happy with how the schools were handling COVID or handling their services within the school system. And so they were looking to leave. And that was something that we were able to leverage because we were able to do things in a different way. We were able to offer flexibility and make quicker pivots than school systems were. And I think the other hard thing was with insurance, just ensuring that insurance was going to cover those services. I think we had families on board, but what if insurance doesn't cover this? And how do we ensure that? But we are very fortunate here in Maryland that it is more of a consumer-based atmosphere. And so insurance was, I think, more willing to cover virtual services here in Maryland than perhaps in other states. So there was less of a fight needed. So yeah, we were very fortunate.
I love that. And I love that you just kind of talked about navigating it, right? There was pivots mm-hmm. and there were things you had to consider and there was everything else, but that there were still silver linings and that you were able to grow during that time when, you know, not every business was able to do so. And I can imagine that that helped prepare you for another big kind of milestone that you have coming up. Can you share with the listeners?
Yeah.
What's it looking like these days and what have you had to do to prepare?
Yeah, so I'm pregnant. I'm due to give birth with our first at the end of April. And so I have been preparing for that, preparing when we decided to try to have a child throughout last year. My husband and I went through IVF, and so just sort of what that looked like. And so with my team being established the way that it was really time to think about, how do I pass off all of these hats that I'm wearing? Jenna, you always talk about, like, you're wearing too many hats. Give them away so that you can wear the one that you're meant to be wearing, which is the CEO hat, and really conceptualizing, well, what does the CEO role actually need to look like? And what does not need to be on my plate? And so I spent all of last year really building out my leadership team. And so I have an office manager who basically leads things on the administrative side, the billing side, the scheduling side, all of that. And then I have two part-time clinical co-directors who lead everything on the therapy side. It used to be, prior to having them, that I was supporting all of the therapists. I was in weekly meetings with all of the therapists, trying to support them with their clinical problem solving or support them with from an HR perspective. And then I was on the admin side, making sure that insurance was paying us and clients were paying us and the cash flow was there, all of those pieces. And now I have people who are so skilled and so capable and who have been with the company for some time. So they understand what our core values are and what our goals are and our mission. And they are able to take the lead in those different areas of the company and offer me support. So I meet with them on a weekly basis, and together we make decisions of where we're going. And that has really freed me up to do strategic planning, which was sort of a foreign concept to me. Like, you know, people talk about, oh, the CEO's job is to do strategic planning. And to me, I'm like, okay, that's cool, but what does that mean? And I've learned over the past year exactly what that means. It's looking at, one of my favorite analyses to do is like a SWOT analysis, looking at the strengths and the weaknesses within our organization and then the opportunities and threats within our community, and ensuring that we are taking that into consideration with the decisions that we're making, the service offerings that we have, that we're thinking about that from a hiring perspective. How do we retain our employees so that, you know, we are their best fit? They want to stay with us. And I have the time and the space and the capacity now to do that with a leadership team to kind of bounce ideas off of. And then they can follow through with any plans that we come up with to ensure support for my team, to ensure support for our clients, ultimately in our community. And so, yeah, so all of last year was spent building that leadership team, taking the time for myself to do strategic planning, which also meant getting ready for maternity leave, building out policies and procedures that were there in my head, but are now written, clarified, more black and white, so that even if I'm not here, things are happening the way that we would expect them to be. My leadership team has decision-making spaces so that they can make decisions like hiring without needing me, because they know kind of those pieces of how do we make these hiring decisions? How do we determine what compensation to offer someone? You know, we've made it very black and white. We've gone through scenarios. We've practiced it all. We've role played. Right now, we're going through a phase of, because it's a month and a half. We're recording this mid-March. So I've said to them, submit your worst nightmare to me of what, like, what's your worst nightmare that might happen while I'm on maternity leave? And so that we can talk through those scenarios as much as possible. And so it's great. I'm excited. I'm going to be on maternity leave for the whole summer. It's going to be glorious.
I love that. And you've been building up to this for a long time, right? So you've really been able to put yourself in your practice and your employees and, you know, everyone in just a really good, and your clients, obviously, too, in a really good position. And sometimes it takes a life event, whether it's something like COVID or, you know, maternity leave, to kind of like think about your business differently and to start to prepare business. And I really love too that you talked about some of these worst case scenarios, and so that you can be pre-planning versus, like, you know, reactive if something happens. I love that.
Yeah. And it's been sort of the focus of this year to ensure that we are process-driven as opposed to people-driven. And not to say that we're taking people out of the equation, but really, if someone can't be here for whatever reason, that we keep moving forward, right? That someone can pick up for them so that they're not out on leave worrying. And so, you know, my office manager is going on a medical leave next week. So she was making sure that I knew everything on the admin side, because I'm going to kind of be covering her while she's gone. And then during my maternity leave, there's less reliance on me because we've established these policies and processes and procedures and everything is clear cut. And it takes time to get there.
Well, it takes time to get there and it takes commitment, right? Like, I think that in the beginning, some listeners are probably like, whoa, like, she's further along, right? Like, and, you know that you will get there and you can get there. But in order to get there, you have to have a commitment, right? A lot of people start their private practices a little bit casual, right? Like, maybe, you know, a couple clients on the side, you know, you're not fully committed. You have either a full-time job or maybe a part-time job. But there's a total shift that happens when people start to commit to their private practice and be like, okay, no, this is going to be my sole source of income. This is going to be. And then there's a second level of commitment that comes when you decide to operate your private practice like a real business. Can you share a little bit about maybe how that looked like for you and what that transition from like casual to committed looked like?
I guess when I think about that, as you're kind of describing it, casual to me feels like, oh, okay, it's just me. So I'm going to kind of make decisions as I go and try to remember what decision I make so that I can be fair across my clients. But it's just me. So if I have to make a concession here in order for that client to come on board, that's cool. Because again, it's just me making those decisions. So I can negotiate every transaction kind of as we go, right? But to me, that feels very casual. Whereas as you make that commitment to turn this really into a business, where you're not just the only one reliant on income from it, but you're perhaps hiring folks who are also reliant on income, which feels like a lot of pressure at first, but it's also incredibly rewarding. You really want to be thinking more methodically and strategically so that you create systems and processes that can grow regardless of the size of your business. And that you're making decisions that don't just work for now in this moment in time or for this specific client, but you're thinking more across your whole organization. Can this be applied for any person that comes? Am I clear about the boundaries around this? And boundaries are a good thing. Sometimes people hear the word boundaries and it's like this taboo word, but boundaries are a good thing because you're clearly stating what your expectations are and how to have a successful relationship, whether it's a successful relationship with your employees where everyone feels fulfilled or a successful relationship with your patients where everyone feels served. And when you think about those processes and systems, they don't just happen overnight and they aren't something that you wait until you have them all to roll it out. You kind of look at each step of the way, at each moment. I feel like, Jenna, you kind of talked about the staircase where like you're growing, and then you have stability within that level that you're at, right? When you're in that stability place, you're really looking at, okay, what are my next big pain points that I need to solve in order to make this easier and in order to automate this a bit more or make this more process driven as opposed to reliant on me as a bottleneck? And those are going to be where you go next. So I knew last year, in order for me to have a successful maternity leave, I need to ensure that the team is feeling good, that there's stability in my team. And so that means having people in leadership roles who have decision-making spaces, who are on board with how we want this organization to go, who are a part of that strategic planning so that they're invested in the outcomes, so that they can keep everything moving while I'm not here.
Totally. And listeners, I want you to think about now like non-therapy businesses for a second, right? So think about like restaurants that maybe you've gone to where it really, you can tell it's just kind of like someone who liked food and wanted to serve food for their family and friends. And it's just like, there's no real systems in place. You know, maybe some things come out hot, some things come out cold. It takes a while to get sat. Like, you know, it just feels kind of like pieced together. versus if you go to something that's more like a franchise, right? Like obviously like a McDonald's is kind of like the pinnacle of this, but even like a Panera or just a local franchise. Maybe there's a restaurant mm-hmm. in your area that has four or five locations. And you can just tell a huge difference between a business that has systems, has processes in place, and has that stability versus one that doesn't. And so I really mm-hmm. want to start thinking about, for those of you who do want to be fully committed and go all in on your private practice, you have to kind of start to make this shift. And remember, like recognize, it took Shauna years to get to the point that where she is now. This didn't just happen overnight, but it came because of persistence and because of learning and because of implementing these things so that she could get to a place where she can truly take the maternity leave that you deserve and mm-hmm. still have your business be probably even growing in your absence.
Yes. As you're talking, I'm also thinking, I always tell my team, every single policy and process that we have has a story behind it.
Yeah.
So everything that we have is because of a learning along the way. And so those policies, those processes weren't always there. There was a learning moment. There was a growth, whether it was I knew I needed to do that learning ahead of time or a mistake happened and we had to figure out how to move forward. But through that learning, by having that growth mindset, we were able to put those things in place so that they don't happen again, or so that we can prevent things from happening. And yeah, so that we can operate so much more smoothly, like a Panera or like one of those local franchises that everybody loves and adores and goes to because they know that they're going to get this high quality experience.
Hi there, Jenna Castor Casbon here, and I hope that you're loving the episode so far. Chances are you've been listening to this podcast for a while and soaking up a ton of information from myself and our guests, and it's time to make the shift from dreaming to doing and go from inspiration to implementation. Successful private practices don't build themselves. At The Independent Clinician, we help regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners using our proven systems. No more guessing, no more Googling, no more sleepless nights stressing about legalities. We can help you just like we've helped the guests featured on this show. They didn't guess or stress their way through private practice. Instead, they got step-by-step help along the way, and we're excited to help you too. If you need help to get set up and started with private clients on the side, the Start Your Private Practice program is perfect for you. If you've already started and you want to transition into full-time private practice and be successful once you're there, the Grow Your Private Practice program is your next step. To learn more about our programs, go to independentclinician.com. Now back to the episode. So if I were to come visit you in your practice, or if any of our listeners were going to come visit you, what does your private practice look like to people from there?
Yeah, great question. So right off the bat, you would call us looking for services. We don't onboard anyone unless we know that we have a regularly scheduled slot that matches their schedule. So our policy is that we won't do an evaluation unless we know that we can serve you, because we have a belief or a value around, I don't want to trick you into thinking that you're going to get an evaluation from us and then you're going to get services right away. Unfortunately, there are some hospital systems around here or other practices that do that. And we've heard a lot of frustrations from families around that. And so we have a policy where we are not going to do that evaluation with you unless we know for sure that we can serve you for ongoing therapy. We will happily give you a referral elsewhere. We'll happily put you on the wait list. We'll happily send you resources. You know, we have all of these other options, but we're not going to schedule you unless we know that we can support you from an ongoing perspective. Then you come, we have already done your benefits verification. We've already communicated with you about your insurance. So you already know coming in a decent idea of what this is going to cost you. Ultimately, we aren't your insurance company. So sometimes things don't go as they tell us it would. But our goal is to ensure that there are no surprises. They come in the door, they're greeted by a warm, friendly person, whether it's my office manager, myself, or one of our front office folks. They check in at the front desk. We have a stuffed giraffe that's
life size if you're a child,
not life size if you're an adult. But yes, his name is Reggie, and he's there basically to help create a warmer environment so that this doesn't feel like a doctor's office. Because sometimes our kids come and they're used to being in doctor's offices a lot, and there's a lot of fear for them around what's going to happen when we take them back. And so we try in our waiting room to create just a very warm, friendly, playful environment. We have some families who, you know, their kids get a little bit loud and they try to tell their kids, oh, shh, be quiet, it's okay. And we're like, oh, it's fine. They can hop. We have like a little bench that they can hop up on to talk to the person sitting at the front desk. And we want people to feel welcomed for who they are, for who their kids are. And so that's our goal in the waiting room. We run a pretty tight ship in terms of being on time. So the therapist usually comes out within a minute or two of their scheduled appointment and takes them back. And at that point, they've already completed their intake paperwork. They already completed their medical history. So the therapist already has a good idea of what their concerns are. So that evaluation appointment is truly to do the assessment, to figure out how we can best support them from a therapeutic perspective. Right now, because we have sort of two office spaces, we talk about going on a little bit of a treasure hunt because we have to go through a bunch of doors to get back to the treatment areas. But the kids seem good with it, and it creates opportunities for communication and gives us an opportunity to see how that child is communicating in a more natural environment. After the evaluation, the therapist brings the family back up to the front to confirm schedule, make any initial recommendations like, yes, I think they should be seen once a week, twice a week, just to make sure that we have the schedule set up correctly before the family goes. And then our next process is that the therapist has 2 weeks to write their evaluation report, and the client starts 2 weeks after that evaluation date. And the reason for that is we want to make sure that our therapists have enough time for their documentation and our admin team has enough time to get insurance authorizations and so on. And so what we've learned is that if we have that window too short, the report might not be done in time for that first appointment, or might not have received authorization from insurance in time for that first appointment. And then we're having to call and reschedule the family, and it feels a little haphazard. And so we just adjusted our policies and gave us the time that we needed so that it feels smooth from the family's perspective. Then for ongoing services, those families, they come on a weekly basis. They check in at the front office. They know that their therapist will be out. And we do have a little kiosk. So we have an iPad set up for families to check in if someone's not sitting at the front desk, which is great. They can run their copay right from the kiosk. And so they can see if they have any balances or anything like that. And then they go back for their treatment sessions. And it's wonderful. We get to know the families. We get to know the kids. They feel very comfortable here. Sometimes we have a couch in the waiting room. So sometimes kids will just kind of lay or lounge on the couch, and it's great.
Sounds like not only just a warm environment, right? From Reggie the giraffe, you know, at the beginning, but also a really well-oiled machine, right? That you have all of these things in place. And that's good for you and for your business, obviously, but it's also good for the families, right? Everyone knows what to expect. It's the same experience every time. That provides a lot of value on all ends.
You know, again, we have fine-tuned that process over the years. So again, you have learning experiences. How do we ensure that we hadn't double booked a clients in the same time slot? How do we make sure that if a therapist is going to be out and we're doing team coverage, that that's been communicated to the family so that they're not surprised, so that they can prepare their child for the change? Because that's something else that we added was team coverage. We didn't always do team coverage. If a therapist was going to be out, then all those kids got canceled, which can create, you know, sort of uncertainty on the family side and then uncertainty from the cash flow side. And so we instituted a process procedure around team coverage and what that looks like and how our therapists can know what team coverage is going to look like so that they feel prepared going into a treatment session. And then on the client side, how they can know what that's going to look like so that they can be prepared and prepare their child.
I love that. Couple of logistics questions. How many families are y'all serving, or how many clients are you serving? Like, what do the teams look like? The people who are working for you in terms of, you know, numbers or disciplines or whatever?
Yeah. So we are serving roughly 200 to 250 families a week, which is pretty awesome. And most of our families are scheduled on a weekly basis. We do have a part-time therapist starting with us at the end of April. And then we are hiring for a full-time therapist to start with us over the summer. So that will certainly increase the number of clients that we're serving at that point. And as far as the teams, so my therapy team consists of our two part-time clinical directors. And then we have three therapists, plus the one that we've already hired, and then the one that we're looking to onboard. On the admin side, we have my office manager. We have a part-time person who supports not just with the front desk, but also with dealing with insurance, with sort of the tricky insurance challenges like doing appeals or figuring out why insurance keeps denying services, kind of digging into those bigger stories. And then we have EJ, who is our virtual medical billing specialist. He is actually based in the Philippines, and he really helps us with submitting claims, following up on claims, calling insurance when their portals don't work, all of those pieces, following up on any insurance denials that we have. He has an uncanny ability to get insurance to agree to shorter turnaround times than we've ever gotten before. And I don't know how he does it, but I love him for it. So that's our team. We have had other front desk folks. We've had patient care coordinators. What we found is that we actually can run a great admin team without all of the extra people, as long as the people that we have are highly skilled and knowledgeable in the work that we're doing. And then we lean on that kiosk to kind of help us in the bumper hours of the day, you know, the beginning of the day or the end of the day, when someone can't necessarily be sitting at the desk, because that allows families to check in, run their copays, and alert the therapist that they're here. And then me.
It's just so smart, right? And like you said, I know that it kind of developed over time, but I love that you're also keeping people kind of like within their zones of genius, right? Like, this is what this person mm-hmm. is. And one of the things that sometimes can happen is, as a business grows, sometimes there can be a little bit of like bloat, like team wise, right? And that can be challenging. But I like that you're kind of like, no, we're going to keep it where, you know, people have certain roles and that's kind of what they do. I think that that's really smart just from an operations point of view.
We kind of made a decision and have committed to it that our therapist should not be responsible for billing or scheduling as much as possible, because that can sometimes complicate that therapeutic relationship that you have with a client and a family. So we've been very methodical about ensuring that we have someone on the admin team to really take over for the therapist from that billing perspective or from that scheduling perspective. Because if there are any billing or scheduling issues, that can sometimes create challenges for a therapeutic relationship to continue. And so we really tried to have a separation there, which our therapists, I think, have been very appreciative of. I think our families are really appreciative because they know who to go to for what. They know not to talk to the therapist about scheduling or billing or anything like that, because the therapist is just going to direct them right to the front. So now certainly our therapists make therapeutic recommendations around scheduling. So the therapist may say, ideally, we'd love to see you for this many types a week for this length of session. And then working with the family and then with the front desk around scheduling to determine, A, does that fit into the family's scheduling availability? And B, do we have the availability on our schedule? Or do we need to start looking for that second slot or third slot or whatever it is?
Well, I like that too. As a therapist who, when I used to work at the hospital, I did have to do some of the billing. I had to do so. It was overwhelming. I just wanted to do what I was good at mm-hmm. with therapy. I didn't want to have to, you know, and it sure, yes, it does kind of sometimes complicate relationships, but it also distracts the therapist from what they are good at, which is generally just giving the therapy and not worrying about billing stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's allowed us to really think about our employee retention strategy, right? I think that, you know, there's a big push right now, which is great to see, thankfully, for programs like yours, for people who want to start their own practices. But if we're trying to grow a practice and we're trying to hire, you know, there's still folks where a private practice, running a private practice, isn't the right path for them. And so we want to make sure that we're offering positions and opportunities for people like that, who are our ideal therapist to join us. Really thinking about, okay, if I'm a therapist and I'm looking for a job and I know that I don't want to do private practice because all of that administrative stuff is overwhelming, my role in being the employer, being the person hiring, is to ensure that I'm offering a position that doesn't include all that other stuff, because that's not what they want. That's not what they're looking for. So I need to make sure that I'm protecting their time so that they can do what really fills up their cup.
I love that. Listeners, just think about, you know, you're just so methodical, right? This is so well thought out. And I know that it comes from learning experiences, right? But still, it's like, it's so refreshing to hear someone who really has put in so much time and effort and thoughtfulness into running a business that serves the clients, that serves the clinicians, serves the office mm-hmm. staff, but also serves you as a partner, right?
I am very fulfilled in knowing that I can offer a career to other therapists, to people who maybe aren't therapists, but really have a love of children and a love of children with special needs. And, you know, that's really the folks who are on our administrative side. That is incredibly fulfilling to be in a position where I can problem solve from a clinical perspective, but I don't necessarily have to be the one providing all of that service to all of those families, to know that I'm still impacting families and kids and our community. That fills up my cup, which is great. So it serves me. Absolutely.
You've evolved over time too, right? Like, and one of the other things I wanted to touch on before we wrap up is, you know, having some of this, you know, I'm not going to say extra time, like you're just, you know, chilling at the beach or whatever, but like, what is having freed up, you know, some time allowed you to do?
Yeah. So at the very beginning of this year, or towards the end of last year, I decided I had freed up my time. I could see where things were going for Kid Connections Therapy with having a leadership team that I could fully trust and fully lean into to sometimes make better decisions than I could on my own. And so it's really freed me to dive into this passion project, which is, I'm calling it the Apraxia SLP. And my goal is to support other therapists around an area of treatment that is near and dear to my heart, because I love working with kids with apraxia of speech or other motor speech disorders. And so my goal, my mission through the Apraxia SLP is to not provide treatment, but really empower other therapists and provide a level of support, whether it's through strategy sessions and really collaborating on, does this child have a motor speech disorder? If so, what should treatment look like? Okay, I've read all this research, but how do I decide which treatment approach to take for this child who doesn't necessarily fit in one particular box? Because that's mostly what happened. So I offer strategy sessions. I also offer team trainings. So really supporting other therapy private practice owners in training their team so that their team can better support those clients in your community. And then once I'm done with maternity leave, offering maybe monthly coaching. So really looking at taking a deeper dive into the research that's out there and, you know, helping other people establish themselves as specialists in this area. There's a lot of great information out there, but sometimes it can be overwhelming to figure out, how do I apply this to the specific kids that I'm seeing? Yes, I understand all of that information, but it's that application piece that I think trips some people up. And so my goal is to kind of fill that gap. And since I now have more time, because my team here at Kid Connections is well cared for and is supported and honestly working like a well-oiled machine, I can start to dive into another area of interest of mine and maybe extend my reach of how I can support clients with speech needs. And ultimately their therapists, and help their therapists feel empowered.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love this. I love this for you. I love this for the people that you serve and that you'll be able to serve even more so because you have freed up that time. listeners, understand that this happens over time and that Shauna has been very methodical, very thoughtful about this, but that you also created space for yourself and your family, right? Whether it's the maternity leave, whether it's this like second leg of your business arm of whatever, wing, whatever you want to call it. It was done over time and it was done with thought. And it's allowed you to really have the best of all worlds, right? You have this practice that's going really, really well. You have people in place to support you. And even though you have stepped out of some of the day-to-day treatment, some or all of the day-to-day treatment, you're now getting kind of in there, but in a different way. And I think that that is cool, so smart and such a great way to do it. And listeners, I hope more people kind of take this approach because it's worked out really well for the people who do it.
Really, the possibilities are endless. You just have to ensure that you have some time in your schedule to think creatively and be willing to take a risk and see how the market, the community responds to that risk and be willing to pivot where pivots need to be made. And don't be scared of pivots. Try not to think of pivots in like the Ross Geller sense of pivots and more in the sense of, oh, cool, that's a door that I didn't realize was there, and then see what's in the door.
Oh my gosh, I love this. For anyone who's listening who's like, wow, this is really cool, I want to like learn more about you, your practice, your business, where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, so two places-ish. So on Facebook, you can find us at Kid Connections Therapy. And then on Instagram, you can find us at Kid Connections Therapy. We've tried to make it very clear and simple. Or if you're really looking for more of the Apraxia SLP stuff, then at the Apraxia SLP, again, trying to make it very simple. And then our websites. So we have a website for Kid Connections Therapy. That's going to be kidconnectionstherapy.com. Or for the Apraxia SLP, shocker, it's the apraxiaslp.com.
I love it. But that's what you want. It's simple and it's SEO friendly and it helps people.
Absolutely.
All the things.
And it helps me remember it. Ultimately.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on, coming back. You know, this is the kind of was supposed to be a Where Are They Now episode. We originally recorded the first one kind of a long time ago now. But yeah. I have loved watching you grow, love what you've created. And love it for you, for again, for your employees, for the clients that you serve, and also for your growing family. Like, I'm just so excited that you're going to be able to take that maternity leave that you've wanted to do and have really built something where you can do it. So congratulations.
Thanks, Jenna. It's been quite a ride and I'm excited to see the future. And I love seeing all the stuff that you're putting out because I feel like you are also ensuring that you're growing to respond to what the community and the market is needing. And so it's just really cool to see that as well.
Again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story and best wishes with the business and with your growing family.
Thank you.
Okay. Don't you just love Shauna? She and I go way back to the very beginning of her private practice journey. And we had the pleasure of meeting in real life at ASHA a few years ago. She's got amazing energy and has learned to truly think and act like a CEO. I am so proud of the life that she's built and thrilled that she and her husband are welcoming a sweet new baby into their lives with plenty of business support and systems to make a solid maternity leave possible. She is a perfect example of someone who had a dream and made it happen. If you would like to learn more about our programs and how we support SLPs and OTs who want our help to start and grow their private practices just like we helped Shauna, please visit independentclinician.com. As always, thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another episode of the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. Till then.
Well, this episode might be over, but we don't have to say goodbye. Head on over to independentclinician.com for resources that will help you at each stage of your private practice journey. If you're on Instagram, let's connect. Follow me and send me a DM. I'm at Independent Clinician. And if you're on Facebook, make sure that you join the SLP and OT Private Practice Beginners Facebook group. All right, off to help more regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners. Let me know if I can help you too.